The PGA Tour presents the fusion of golf, music, sports, and entertainment. Golf Talk America, streaming live on PGATour.com. Follow us today and every day on Twitter at Golf Talk America. Now, the Golf Talk America crew.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to Golf Talk America. Tim Matthews in with you on a beautiful Monday, June the 6th. At least it's beautiful where I'm at, and it's beautiful wherever William McGirt happens to be at this point, too, because he is now the champion of the Memorial Tournament presented by Nationwide, and he did a phenomenal job of winning it in a sudden death with John Curran, and he walks away with the $1.5 million check, the trophy, a handshake from Jack and Barbara Nicklaus, and all the rewards that go with it, 500 FedEx Cup points, and moved within the top 10 now in the FedEx Cup race. So a great, great tournament at the Memorial for William McGirt, and we'll talk about that coming up in just a little bit. We got a lot of things coming your way on this show. We've got Art Selinger joining us. Art Selinger is a two-time long drive champion. He ran World Long Drive Championship events for the last 20 years before handing them over, the keys to the franchise, if you will, to the Golf Channel, who now run them. And he's going to be talking to us, not so much about him, but one of his proteges, Jamie Sadlowski, a guy that he's taken under his wing for the last 10 years or so. Jamie is a two-time World Long Drive champion, but he's also a phenomenal golfer and a great story because he is today, along with a lot of other people around the country, one of the beauties of the U.S. Open, British Open, is that it's open to everybody that can qualify. And Jamie is trying to qualify today outside of Columbus, Ohio. Gary McCord is on his bag. So Jamie's got a great story. He's playing out of Whisper Rock in Scottsdale, Arizona. Got to know McCord and a lot of the members there, a lot of the tour pros that play out of there. And he's refined his game to the point where he shoots in the mid-high 60s very often and is qualified for Web.com tournaments. So he's going to try to play at the U.S. Open. We'll see how that shakes out today in his qualifying. But this is a guy that can hit the ball well over 400 yards. I mean, on the PGA Tour, he would blow it past the Dustin Johnsons, who blow it past everybody else, by 60, 70 yards. And yet he's got a game that he can chip and putt. So kind of fascinating. We'll talk to Art Selinger about Jamie coming up in a little bit. And then Earl Forsey with PGA Tour Radio will be joining us a little bit later on as well. And he'll give us a lowdown on what happened, speaking of Columbus, at the Memorial in Columbus. It must be a reason that Jamie's qualifying in Columbus, and I'm guessing it's because Gary McCord's his caddy. He's kind of his mentor that's been working with his game quite a bit, and Gary just got off the air yesterday with the CBS crew in Columbus for the Memorial, so I guess they worked it out that way that Gary would be there and Jamie would fly in, and that's where they're going to try to qualify with Gary being his caddy. So interesting story. You'll be hearing a lot more about that, I'm sure, and seeing some video on Golf Channel or whatever with McCord actually schlepping a bag around the golf course. They're playing at Springfield Country Club is the name of the course. So anyway, pretty interesting story. And Earl will be talking to us as well, Earl Forsey, about the Memorial Tournament and upcoming U.S. Open that we're talking about right now. So a lot of things happening in the world of golf. Let you get you caught up in case you missed it. Last night, Golden State demolished Cleveland in Game 2 of the NBA Finals. 110-77, the final score last night. And so Golden State has a 2-0 lead now on the Cavs in the NBA Finals. And in the French Open, Novak Djokovic beat Andy Murray in 4 sets, and that means that Djokovic has won his first French Open, and now he has the career Grand Slam. He's already won multiple U.S. Opens, Australian Opens, Wimbledons, but this was his first win at the French Open. So he now has 12 majors and his first win at the French Open, so the career Grand Slam. He also, as of right now, owns all 4 major tennis titles because he won Wimbledon and the U.S. Open last year, and started this year in January winning the Australian Open. Now he's won the second of the year, and that's the French Open. So he's got 4 in a row, kind of like a Tiger slam that you remember several years ago when Tiger owned 4 of the majors at one time. Now Djokovic's done the same thing in tennis. So a lot of things happening today. I feel like SportsCenter right now. Frank Bassett joining us, as always, from his studio in Nashville. One other big headline in the world of sports. Frank played in the, and I'll say it wrong, the Hemlisch-Schlager tournament in Nashville, named after a Nashville assistant football coach for a very good cause, but I always mess up the name. Frank, what tournament did you play in over the weekend?
It was the Heimerdinger. It's the Heimerdinger. The Heimerdinger. He was our offensive line coach for the Titans, who got cancer and passed away. He was under Jeff Fisher. Great man, great golfer, a lot of fun to be around. His wife, Kathy Heimerdinger, and his family put this tournament on every year. It's a celebrity golf tournament. And, you know, we bring in Fisher and Shanahan and Chris Carter and tons of folks. I mean, tons of players come in. Nice. The Jets are involved with this as well as the Titans. So it's a big deal. It's a couple of days of a lot of fun. Vanderbilt Legends Club is where the tournament's played. And my team came in 11 under par, which was not enough. Nice. Not enough.
Never is. So, never is.
Not enough. Yeah.
You could have said 18 under. Probably wouldn't have been enough.
No, I think 54 won it, by the way. So
yeah.
We were 60.
But you had a good
time.
So
anyway, but we had a great time. Great party. Wade Hayes played the party on Saturday night. He's a cancer survivor. And what they do, what the Dinger Foundation does, Heimerdinger Foundation, is they do, they prepare and deliver meals for cancer patients that are nutritionally designed to help with the healing process. So it's a great organization, great cause, and it's the Heimerdinger Foundation. You can find them online if anybody wants to go, you know, donate a dollar or two. A dollar, $10, $50, sure. $50,000. Doesn't matter. It's just for a great cause. And had a testimonial from one of the ladies, and oh boy, you know, that always just breaks your heart in half.
Right.
But anyway, it was a lot of fun.
Did the weather hold up all right?
It did, until the award ceremony. I was emceeing the award ceremony, and all heck broke loose. I mean, we had a monsoon come through. I thought I was in Texas.
Yeah,
it was brutal, just brutal. So, but anyway, it was a good weekend. But there's something else going on that you didn't talk about. Two things.
Smokes. There's more? Oh, no, there's more?
This is important. This is a big day in the Bassett home. This is Bogey the Wonder Dog's third birthday.
Wow.
It's Bogey's birthday today, so we're gonna get him some new toys and treats and good stuff. I shouldn't have said that, because Bogey the Wonder Dog is here with me in the studio. So if you hear anything, it'll be Bogey chiming in.
I'm pretty sure he's not aware. Yeah.
Well, he's watching the Golf Channel right now, as a matter of fact.
Oh, good for him.
He always does. He loves it. But this also will be heading out on the road again. This week we'll be at the FedEx St. Jude Classic in Memphis.
I'll
be out of here after the show. Well, actually, I'm going to head out really early in the morning. So I'll be there, and you'll be in Dallas, I guess, this week. Yeah. And Bobby will be here in Nashville engineering it, and we'll be bringing you some highlights from Memphis. Always fun. A lot of barbecue. And Memphis is also the home of my favorite cheese dip in the world, Poncho's Cheese Dip, the official cheese dip of Golf Talk America. It's great stuff.
Now you get a free pint for saying that. There you go. Take it home.
5 pound. I buy it in 5 pound bags. 5 pound bags of cheese dip. Yeah, love the stuff. I put it on my chocolate cake. I mean, it's great stuff.
It also yuck. Also happening over the weekend. Certainly, everybody knows the tributes to Muhammad Ali, the greatest, passed away. Out in Scottsdale, and flown back to Louisville. They'll have tributes all this week in Louisville, and big funeral, I think, on Thursday and Friday is what they're saying, and a private one, and then open to the public, and a procession down Muhammad Ali Boulevard in Louisville to the gravesite where he's going to go. So, you know, one of the greatest icons of all time, not only in the ring, but certainly what he could do to affect change and do all the things that he did, the ups and downs. And this is an extremely controversial person. For anybody that's younger, they probably just remember him as a unfortunate Parkinson victim and knew that he was somebody at one point. But if you ever got to see him in his prime, transform the game of boxing, because he was a heavyweight, so he's a bigger guy, but he was as fast as a featherweight. I mean, he was quick. So a lot of these big, Sonny Liston, even Frazier and Foreman, were big, strong guys that would kind of try to overpower each other. Ali would come in and get in like six jabs before the guy even got off the bench or the stool in the corner. He was that quick. So a very, very different type of boxer. Kept his hands low, tempted the guys to come in and take big shots, and he would duck and duck and miss. Just a phenomenal strategist. And then went on to certainly change a lot of things in the world of boxing and in the world in general. Met with a lot of world leaders. And at one point, well before Tiger and Michael Jordan, was the most famous person in the world. I mean, people knew him from Africa to Asia to everywhere, every continent, everybody knew who Muhammad Ali was. And he did a lot of great things. And so he passed away at the age of 74. The amazing thing, Frank, and I'm not in any way a Parkinson expert, but he lived quite a long time with the disease. I think quite a bit longer, they're saying, than anybody would normally expect, because he got Parkinson's actually shortly after he retired. He retired at around 40. And by his mid-40s and late 40s, he already was having the effects of Parkinson's and then lived to 74. So it was a long life that he had. And I got to meet him at Wichita, Kansas Airport. He was coming through for something, and I was working in Wichita, and I got to interview him. And he was not where he was at the end of his life, but, you know, could still talk somewhat. And I actually, which is against all protocol, my dad's a big boxing fan. I had him sign a piece of paper, very shaky handwriting that he had, and it took him a good 30 to 40 seconds to write his name out. But I gave that to my dad, and he thought it was the neatest thing in the world. Not something you should do when you're in the media is ask for autographs, but I couldn't resist at the time. But kind of a thrill to be able to meet him, you know? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, what a cool guy. I've met him before, and he was an incredible man. You know, everyone, even on Morning Drive this morning, Chris DeMarco was talking about the fact that probably the biggest event or greatest event that was the Atlanta Olympics, okay? That when he lighted.
Lit the torch?
Lit is not a word. It's lighted, I guess, in the dictionary and Webster. But anyway, when he lighted the final torch, I mean, I was there. I was in that stadium, and everybody was crying. Tears were just flowing, man, because that was a moment. I think that's probably one of the biggest moments in emotional sports I've ever experienced. It was awesome.
He was amazing. And so we'll be hearing all this week, we'll be hearing tributes and things, justifiably so, to his life, and just taken away way too soon. 74, just not a very old man, but again, had the unfortunate effects of Parkinson's at a pretty young age. And anyway, got through it, and we'll talk more about him.
We've got to throw out our congratulations to William McGirt, though, for sure. I mean, 165 starts, and this is his first win. In fact, it came down, and I know you'll get into this later in the show with Earl, but it came down to two non-winners on the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
John Curran and William McGirt. When you have number one, two, and three in the world playing in that tournament. McIlroy made a run. I mean, toward the end, he made a run at him.
But not only the big three, but you also had Phil in there. You had Ricky in there. You had Dustin and Bubba. I mean, all the big guys. Big guys were playing in this tournament. And the cream didn't necessarily rise to the top as far as the world golf rankings. But that's kind of the beauty of golf. You never know. You tee it up, somebody's got a shot at it. And in this case, it was William McGirt and Curran that made it to the playoff. And McGirt wins the whole enchilada. So good for him. Hey, let's take a quick break here.
Happy for him.
We got Art Selinger calling in from God knows where. We'll find out where. But fascinating story. He's going to talk about Jamie Sadlowski again. If you haven't heard about Jamie, we'll talk to Art Selinger about it, trying to qualify for the U.S. Open. This is a guy that hits the ball a mile and wins world-long drive championships, but he's got a great all-around golf game. And if he makes it to the U.S. Open, he will be a phenomenal story that people will be following. So we'll talk with Art Selinger when we come back. You're listening to Golf Talk America here on PGA Tour Radio, so stay with us. Welcome back to Golf Talk America. Tim Matthews in with you today. And as you said, we've got Earl Forsey with PGA Tour Radio joining us in just a little bit to go over some of the final stats and what happened in the playoff at the Memorial Tournament presented by Nationwide. William McGirt winning in the playoff. And what happened to the big three? We're going to talk about that with Earl coming up in just a little bit. But right now, we'd like to welcome Art Selinger to the program. Art's been with us before. He is a two-time long drive champion and the owner for many, many years of the World Long Drive Championship, put on the tournament all over the country and literally all over the world for the last 20 years or so. And he joins us now from Newport, Rhode Island, I'm guessing. Art, you're sailing your yacht or something? Is that what you're doing in Newport?
I am not sailing my yacht. My wife and I are getting away from Texas rain and Texas heat, but just on a little vacation for a few days.
Okay.
But never too much of a vacation to call you.
Never. Thank you so much. I had no idea I was interrupting such a great vacation. So we'll make it. We'll try to get in and out of this.
No,
so you get back
fine.
Your vacation.
We're good. We're good. Okay. We're great.
Well, we've been teasing this earlier in the show, but this is open qualifying for many people and many sites all over the country for the U.S. Open coming up in a few weeks. And one of your proteges, Jamie Sadlowski, for people unfamiliar with the world of long driving, is one of the great long drive champions, a two-time world long drive champion, a guy who routinely can hit the ball with the driver 400 yards plus. And every other club, in the, I think he probably hits his 9-iron close to 200 yards if he wants to. Just phenomenal club head speed, ball speed, and all the other things you can combine. But a lot of times those guys don't always have a great all-around game. Jamie's different. He's played in Web.com tours. And here he is today in Columbus, Ohio, I believe, or outside of Columbus, qualifying for the U.S. Open. So tell me little bit about Jamie. What makes him so much different than a lot of the other guys you've been around, who are all good golfers, but he's trying to be literally a world-class all-around golfer. What makes him different than some of those other guys?
Well, I've had the opportunity to manage Jamie's career since 2008 when he won that World Long Drive Championship. So we're close in that manner, but I've always known he's had game. What's unique, to answer your question, is he's never been trained for golf. He never played competitive golf as a kid. He just played golf in the summer and, of course, hockey the other 9 months. He didn't play college golf. And so when we started doing the exhibitions, when he did around the country after winning the World Championship, we played a ton of golf. And just flat out, he just never shot over par. And he didn't really realize how good he was. So, like you said, he's played 4 Web.com events. I've been on the bag for those. He's made 3 cuts. Played 4 Canadian Tour events, made all the cuts, and then quick story to this is he joined Whisper Rock Golf Club and started playing with a lot of the PGA Tour players and just shot many mid-60 rounds with these guys, whether it was Kevin Chappell, Jeff Ogilvy, and that whole list that's out there. So I egged him on, and I actually signed him up for this U.S. Open qualifier. He shot 65 with Gary McCord on the bag, and he won the local, and he's in the toughest sectional today, the longest day in golf, they call it. 36 today, and he's outside of Columbus. And what makes him unique is he just has the ability to control his golf ball when he's in a tournament situation. Again, without that training, the problem today is he's at a Donald Ross golf course, and the greens are just so unique to him. He just hasn't had that much experience playing these kinds of greens. Obviously, he's playing with 2 tour players today, Tony Finau and Troy Merritt. A lot of pressure. So if he does this more often like I'd like him to and he makes the transformation over to playing, he'll play just fine. He can hit any shot.
It's kind of weird in a sense and unique in the sense that he, Jamie, as you say, has to bring it back a few notches from what he normally might do when he's trying to play competitive golf. He may not have to hit a 9-iron 190 yards. Is that difficult? It's almost the opposite for a lot of these guys who try to step on the pedal and get a few extra yards on every shot and with this club or that club. He's actually almost doing the reverse sometimes, isn't he?
Well, yeah. I mean, you look at Tony Finau. He had to dial it back to play. Gary Woodland got tightened up by Randy Smith to play. All these guys that have 350-plus power. Now, when I'm on the bag with Jamie and we see a green light opportunity, I want Jamie to use his strength. The strengths of a long hitter not only are off the tee, Tim, but they can find any corner pin. When we played in Boise, Idaho, which is the tiniest golf course on the web.com tour and the firmest and fastest greens, he could find a flag from 200 yards with a wedge over any bunker and hold any green. We played with players that had to hit 5 and 6 iron, and they were hitting the ball over the green. So there's a time to use that weapon, and a lot of times it's going to be today he can hit his driving iron 300-plus yards, and that's, you know, on bent grass fairways. That's not at TPC Sawgrass where Jason Day, you know, hit 300-yard 2-irons. Jamie would hit it 350 there. So Finau said it best. He's 50 yards longer than me, and he'll have to dial it back a little. But Jamie can flight the ball. It's all going to be the putter today. He worked hard on Saturday with Ian Baker Finch, who's become, you know, all the CBS guys have become mentors to him. They really want to see him make it. So McCord, Finch, Costas, they're helping him. And he just has not hit enough putts under pressure. Today will be Jamie's 5th competitive round of golf the entire year and his 9th in 2 years. So he's going to try the web.com school this fall. He just has to get more reps. And I'm telling you right now, if this kid would play for 9 months to 24 months around the world consistently, a new style of golf is going to hit the PGA Tour.
We're talking with Art Selinger, World Long Drive champion, and we're talking about the guy he manages, Jamie Sadlowski, qualifying today outside of Columbus for the U.S. Open coming up in just a few weeks. You're talking about his putting. You're also talking about how few of competitive rounds he's had. So is it fair to say that the mental game is going to be maybe the weakness for Jamie? He's got all the shots. He can do a lot of things with a golf ball. But when it comes down to, as you said, hitting pressure shots or pressure putts, right, while he has that in World Long Drive, there's pressure. You have to hit it in a certain width of the grid and length, and there's pressure on you to try to qualify and to try to get to the finals and everything. A different kind of pressure, though, with an 8-foot
totally
downhill putt. Is that going to be the toughest part for him today?
Absolutely. Well, long drives, all adrenaline. Hit it as hard as you can. One out of six matters or whatever. So, you know, there's no comparison. When I was on the bag in Bogota, you know, it's about patience. Jamie made, I believe he almost led the field in birdies, but yet we finished 55th place after making the cut. So Jamie made a lot of mistakes, a lot of sloppy one-shot mistakes, okay? And when you get the reps, you won't make those mistakes. So it's about a short side miss. It's about feeling the pressure and knowing that golf in tournament play is a 72-hole marathon and not a sprint. Today's a 36-hole marathon. I know he started out 2 over after 9. Fox Sports is following him, doing a documentary. My expectations today were that he's probably going to keep it around par, which would be great. He's playing in the toughest qualifier where all the tour players play from Columbus. But the pressure is, it will come when he has more reps, when he faces more situations, so that he's comfortable. When you play 4 to 8 competitive rounds a year, I mean, you're not even dabbling, you know. So this is, again, he played BogotaWeb.com, made the cut early in February. Next tournament round was the qualifier, and then today, here we go. So he's just getting started. He'll be 28 in July. It's about a 3-year commitment to make sure that he's doing the right thing. He'd have to stop everything he's doing and give it 3 solid years. And every tour player, and he knows literally over 100 of them, has told him, you're making a huge mistake not being out here. So it's a road, it's a process. I know he wants to qualify. I'd love to see him qualify because I'll be on the bag at Oakmont if he makes it. I'd love to do that with him. I mean, we'd have no chance on those greens, but heck, just to play the Open. So we talked last night. It's a freewheel deal. Finau and Merritt are tour players. They do that for a living. They have the pressure on him, and he'll learn a lot about his game today. That's the key. Is it's always a learning experience, and they can all play. As you see, a guy like Willie McGirt, who would ever think a guy like that would win a tournament, win the top 3 in the world, or 7 of the top 10 are in the world or in a field, but they can all play, Tim. You know that.
Hey, Art, you were saying he's going to be 28 pretty soon. That's not too old. I imagine he's got a young golf body for all the lack of tour play. He certainly has had the beating on him from a long drive standpoint, but 28 is not too late to kind of get this process going?
I don't think so. He's in incredible shape. He works out a lot. There's zero injury, even though he played all that hockey. He doesn't hit. For long drive, he trains for about 2 weeks max. He doesn't hit a lot of long drive clubs, the extended length 48-inch when he does exhibitions. So he's a young golfer. Again, it's experience. He's going to have to play some state opens and web.coms if he can get in. And my plan is to send him around the world and be more global. And honestly, take the Brooks Koepka route is probably going to be the best if he doesn't get his web.com card. We're not going to sit there and jones for every single sponsor exemption we can get so they can see a sideshow. It's not his world. He doesn't want to live that world. He wants to earn it. And if we get a spot, we get a spot. But he'll have to. It's reps is really all it is. I told him, I said, if you can play 100 competitive rounds in 1 year, the 101st the next year is going to feel like it's old hat. And right now, every time he plays, it's brand new. And every time I was on the bag, I remember getting off to a start with him, and it's just different. When you have to put a score on that card, walking down the fairway every day, after each hole, it's just so unique to long drive, and all these other players bring that junior golf, and I'm talking, we know where that is, AJGA, the training, and then college golf, and you just know how awesome college golf is, and he missed those 10 to 12 years of golf. So he's a junior golfer right now in a pro tour world. And when you think about it, he's made 90% of the cuts he's ever played in professional golf. They passed around bets in Bogota in the locker room, which irritated us a little bit, that A, he wouldn't break 80 on that golf course, or B, wouldn't make the cut. Some guys took the yes and the no on that. And, you know, we shot 71, 68 and made the cut and kind of shut a few up. And then when he got the medal at DC Ranch shooting 65, he at least got their respect. He doesn't feel like an outcast walking on the range. So you have to earn your peers' respect. I think that means at least to yourself you belong for a second. So that helped.
Well, he's the nicest guy in the world, and we wish him nothing but success. And you've done a great job with him, Art, to get him this far. We'll see what happens. You're right; it's an open book, and we'll see how the final pages are written. But it couldn't happen to a nicer guy. Jamie's just a classy, really, really cool kid.
It'll change golf. I mean, especially big boy tour golf. Not today's 6,700 yard course. Today's not going to decide if he's going to play pro golf or not. Today's just another small step in the road. So, you know, if you ever get to see him on the PGA Tour, which I hope he does, and he's playing at Memorial, he's going to try and drive the 17th green. I mean, that's what he'll be able to do. He'll be able to drive 400-yard holes. People will have to wait for him to get off the green. We did that in Bogota on 425-yard holes. We waited for people to get off the green, and he successfully hit the green. Now, that was at altitude, but, you know, he's got to use that. He's not going to – if he makes the tour, he's not going to hit a 7-iron off the tee. Not as long as I'm alive, anyway. I'll tell you that much.
I know you're right about that one. Hey, Art, thanks so much for taking time out of your vacation. We appreciate it. Have a great week.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right, take care. Art Selinger, talking about Jamie Sadlowski, and he is a cool guy. Jamie's a really, really nice guy. He's Canadian, if you're wondering why he brought up the hockey thing. He grew up in Alberta. He's missed out on a lot of golf, so he's making up for it. But I'm telling you, if this guy can play, if you ever see him hit a golf ball, oh, my God, it would transform the world. You thought it was a big deal when Tiger came on the scene and everything. Think about clearing the green on 400-yard par fours. Because Jamie's coming in, it could happen. All right, let's take a quick break. Top of the hour, we're going to come back. We'll talk with Earl Forsey. Talk about Big Bomber. Earl Forsey will be joining us to talk about what happened in Columbus or outside of Columbus at the Memorial Tournament. William McGirt, the big champion. We'll talk with Earl when we come back to Golf Talk America. So stay with us. Welcome back to Golf Talk America here on PGA Tour Radio. Tim Matthews in with you today. And as you probably noticed over the weekend, at the Jack Nicklaus-hosted Memorial Tournament presented by Nationwide, William McGirt held off John Curran and won in a playoff, second playoff hole, to win his first PGA Tour event. Both of them finished at 15 under par. McGirt wins it and picks up a nice $1.5 million check. Not too bad for Curran, $918,000 for the runner-up position in that one. And obviously all the FedEx Cup points that go with it and everything else. So big, big day for William McGirt. Here to talk a little bit about it is voice of PGA Tour Radio, Earl Forsey. How you doing today, Monday morning, Earl?
I'm doing well. How about you today?
Not too bad, not too bad. So a bit of a surprise. We were talking earlier on the show that, you know, certainly this tournament with Jack's stamp of approval, and not unlike what the Byron Nelson used to be with Lord Byron there, a lot of people wanting to pay tribute and honoring him. So most of the big names show up for Jack's tournament memorial. It also is a very good warm-up as the U.S. Open is right around the corner. And yet we don't really see any of the big names, although certainly final day, Rory put up a little bit of a challenge there at the end and got in early, but McGirt and Curran aren't names that normally you would consider when you have the big three there, along with Ricky and along with Bubba and Dustin and all these other guys. Were you at all surprised by who you saw in that two-man playoff at the end of this tournament?
Well, I mean, going into the week, and I said last week, you know, I set this up by saying this is, you know, kind of what people are hoping for. Let's get Day and Spieth and McIlroy there and see what happens. But I did preface it by saying that, you know, usually these things don't live up to the hype, and it's another week in golf, another week on the PGA Tour with so many different guys that can get it done. And, you know, by the end of yesterday, we were left even in the playoff with two guys that, you know, were going to make it three consecutive first-time winners at the event. So the recent history, especially the Memorial's kind of had a history of guys getting it done for the first time. Now, a couple years ago was Matsuyama, and then last year, Ling Murth, and Now McGirt, but you know, William McGirt's been kind of a guy knocking on the door. He's got a really good game, just solid game that, you know, Fred Albers was tracking him most of the weekend. He was talking about it after Saturday, after the rain delay and after we were done on Saturday, that, you know, I think that his opinion was that don't sell McGirt short, because I think sometimes you kind of, it's easy to overlook how good a player he is. And then yesterday, you know, Jack, I think, talked about this after everything was done, that, you know, his kind of philosophy, Nicklaus's, was always just wait for all the stuff to happen around you, you know? I mean, that was always his thing, that, you know, players would make mistakes and collapse around them a lot of times, and kind of the tournament would come to you. And that's kind of what happened with McGirt on Sunday. He was the guy that was bogey-free the entire day. He made one birdie on the front nine and just made a bunch of pars. And when they got to the back nine, it was interesting on Sunday, because the scoring was not quite as low as it was the first 3 days, and it was nuts on Saturday with 364s. But there were some birdies being made, and, you know, there was a lot of jostling atop the leaderboard, a lot of, you know, shuffling of positions and big four-way ties and that. And they got to the back nine and the start of the back nine, and it was interesting. And Dennis Paulson, alongside me Sunday, brought it up, because Phil Mickelson got on. He got a little birdie run going late in the front nine. He gets to the back, and we're watching Phil's numbers, and he goes bogey, bogey, bogey at 10, 11, and 12. And, you know, you're thinking, well, it's just kind of an up-and-down day, and Phil kind of maybe taking some shots at things, or, you know, taking a chance here and dropped a couple shots. But, no, that was kind of the precursor for what happened, because the guys got the back nine, and it was right before the weather delay. And even before the weather delay, because afterwards, the winds kind of started whipping up, and they were howling. They were ripping and swirling and gusting, so that was causing problems coming in. But that back nine, early in the back nine, a lot of guys started dropping shots, and it went from a four-way tie for the lead to three guys dropping shots, and then Kuchar was left in the lead. And, right, you know, kind of making a couple of pars at 10 and 11, then he has a problem at 12, he drops back, and that was kind of the beginning of all these guys struggling coming in, and McGirt was the only one making pars. And kind of that patience paid off. Everything came to him, and then Kern with a great shot into 17 makes birdie the end up in the playoff. And McGirt had a great up and down on the first hole of sudden death, and a great one on the second one too, because both those guys were over the green, and McGirt was the one that was able to flop it and keep it close. A tough shot from over the green and sank the putt. So long way of saying not a surprise, because that has happened the last few years at the Memorial. And things got tough on the back nine, and the guy that was cleanest through it basically ended up winning the golf tournament. That's McGirt.
You talked about Kuchar, and Kuchar, after the delay, comes out on 13, a par four that's challenging, but should be certainly a par, gets a double bogey, and yeah, kind of quickly says goodbye. It was Kuchar's tournament to win, don't you think, at that point, or during the rain delay? He seemed to be in control, seemed to be having a good tournament, and has the experience of being around the lead for a number. It just vanished that quickly. But I think, in my opinion, I thought Kuchar kind of had things where he wanted them at that point, coming out of that rain delay.
I was given the number all weekend about Matt Kuchar, and he was 64 under par at the Memorial coming into the week since 2007. So he had won, yeah, in 2013, but that win in 2013 was the end of a run of, I think, five straight top fives at the term. So he always plays well there. And he started out, I mean, he was sizzling to start out the week, and really, you know, was there through the weekend. So here's where he ends up. So he ends up 13 under par. So he's 77 under par at that tournament since 2007, which, if you look at some of the other numbers, and Furyk was the next best coming into the week. I think by the end it was Ryan Moore ended up as the second best of the scores since that time, because of the way he finished and what he shot yesterday. But basically it's double. Kuchar's number under par is double, like the next best guy since 2007. So, yeah, this is a place he always does well, and he's right there, and you're thinking, you know, and with some others who were, you know, trying to get it done for the first time, in the case of McGirt, who eventually won, a guy like John Kern, yeah, you're thinking, boy, this is Kuchar's tournament to win, and because of what I just talked about, all the attrition around him, and then he starts making mistakes. Like I said, he has the bogey at 12, and then the mess at 13, and maybe, you know, lucky to get away from there with just a double bogey. It was just awful, and that was kind of the wake up moment. Like, wow, even Matt's having problems on the back nine, and that was kind of like you said. I thought it's easy to say from the outside looking in, but yeah, it seemed at that point, coming off the delay, it was about an hour and a half delay, a little less than that, that it seemed to be his tournament to win. Now he bounces right back because Kuchar does that. He just smiles on his face and he just kind of puts it behind him, the bad stuff even, and bounces right back. But the fact, yeah, I think that he's kind of probably thinking that's one that got away from him, a good chance at least to win, got away from him Sunday. And, you know, it's still been a couple years now since he's won on the PGA Tour, and that's something I bring up a lot with Kuchar, that he had that run where he's still got all these top tens. It's, what, 62 now for him since 2010. It's crazy.
Right.
But, and like four in a row. But, you know, it's last season was his first season without a win in 4 years, and he's been knocking on the door the last few weeks, playing well. Maybe it's coming, but, you know, it's tough to break. It's tough to get that next one. It's you know, you get there on Sunday, and even a guy like Kuchar we saw yesterday, mistakes can happen, and there's always somebody either making a couple of birdies down the stretch or a guy like McGirt just playing well. And, you know, if you stumble, usually there's somebody else there ready to take your place, and that's, I think, what happened yesterday. Yeah, disappointing, I would say, for him the way that finished.
We're talking with Earl Forsey with PGA Tour Radio. Let me ask you about Jordan Spieth coming off a big win at the Dean and DeLuca at Colonial. And first 2 days, okay, he shoots 70, yep. 68. But on the weekend, it's almost like the consistency just isn't there. And we even go back to the week before at Colonial, at Byron Nelson over the weekend. Things just weren't holding together for him. He's looking forward, like everybody, to the U.S. Open just down the road. There's something about Jordan's game that, at least for four rounds, doesn't seem like it's holding up, does it?
Yeah, I don't know what it is either, because, you know, I was given his numbers, doing leaderboards every, you know, half hour, hour, whenever I would, you know, get that deep and mention him. But it was a weekend where, you know, we barely saw him, except he made a couple of early birdies on Saturday and was two under, I think, through five or something like that. And then, it didn't seem to me, and again, I can't say, I didn't see a lot of it. I mean, he was kind of playing in obscurity after kind of dropping off out of contention on Saturday and teed off in the back nine yesterday. So I don't know. I know I looked at the putting numbers weren't good. So, you know, how much do you tell by stats? It's telling, but I'm not watching it, and it just seemed like that was part of an issue. With still, it's not consistent enough putting for him, which usually is kind of the key to his success. But just it wasn't big mistakes. It wasn't like he made a triple somewhere. It's just he made bogeys and kept making them and couldn't stop making them. And Saturday, when some other guys were getting themselves in contention, and again, on a day where there were 364s, you know, he's shooting two over par. You're done as far as winning the tournament. So, yeah, there's with all the momentum out of Colonial, but he's Jordan Spieth. He's a two-time winner. He's defending FedEx Cup champ. And it's a week-to-week thing. You know, it's not a lot of times it's not just all these top tens and just consistency throughout the entire season. Sometimes it's a good week, sometimes it's a bad week. 2 weeks ago was a good week, he won. This week was a bad week, and he wasn't in contention and finished on the front nine on Sunday. But 2 weeks from now, who knows, could be a different story. You know, it's tough to explain. I'm sure it's tough for him to figure out right now.
Yeah, I'm sure. Hey, Earl, before I let you go.
Consistency, you know? I mean, he's not
right.
He's not going to wow you with distance or stuff. Yeah, he's got that knack for that short game is spectacular. He makes those bombs, those killer putts. But his game, he'll kill you with consistency. And when you're a player that kills people with consistency and you're inconsistent, that's frustrating, I would think.
Yeah, I think so, too. Before we let you go, Earl, any chance for those few Cleveland Cavalier fans out there for that team to pull anything out? Some people are even thinking they're not even going to win when they go back to Cleveland. I don't happen to agree with that, but Golden State is just a phenomenal team, aren't they?
They are crushing the Cavaliers with, you know, it's not like, no, I didn't see most of the end of the game last night, but, you know, like game one, you know, the Splash Brothers, and you're talking about, you know, Steph Curry, a two-time MVP, it's not like he's the one killing them. They've got. I think people are finding out, especially with Curry getting banged up in the playoffs, and you know the way things happen when they fell down 3-1. they're probably a lot better team, and this shows that it's not just one guy. And even when Michael Jordan and the Bulls were dominating, that was a great team around him. I think, you know, if you're not a day-in, day-out NBA observer, if you're just kind of a casual observer, just a casual sports fan, you're probably finding out in these playoffs that the Golden State's a lot better team than a lot of people were given credit for. And that's kind of been, you know, that's kind of, even though when Tyronn Lue took over as coach, you know, Cleveland got a lot better. But, you know, while they have LeBron James and they've got players, and Kevin Love got banged up last night, who knows if he's going to play again even, with a concussion issue, and Kyrie Irving, they're not as good. The group doesn't always add up. The sum of its parts doesn't always add up to the individual pieces, you know, with Cleveland sometimes. And, boy, is there a chance if they win this next game in Cleveland? Yeah, there's a chance because you got the two home games, but I don't know where there's a sign that there's any hope of turning things around after being pretty much having it handed to you two times. I know Oracle's a tough place to play, and, you know, you get Cleveland back at home, but obviously they got to win this next game now, and they're probably going to be shorthanded. I mean, I would guess that Kevin Love, he's in concussion protocol. I would guess he's not going to play. So now you've gotten walloped on the road twice, and now you're a man down in this one. It's looking pretty bleak, and, you know, my heart's out to the people in Cleveland. Look, I'm in D.C., and it's been since 91, the Redskins' last title. But I grew up in a time where the Wizards, who were then the Bullets, they were winning and all that stuff. So there was a lot of championships. Redskins won three times. But people think now, this generation thinks of D.C. as a cursed loser town because nobody ever wins anything. Or when you do, like the Capitals did, they're top team in this league in the NHL, and you get knocked off in the playoffs. So I know that mentality, but this team has titles. This team has won championships, and yeah, I know it's 25 years. It's a generation, but so I know that feeling here. I can't imagine what it's like in Cleveland. You know, being a hometown person there. It's crazy, and so I can imagine it. And until you get it done, it's hard to shake that label. And I think there's always a chance. It's sports. There's always a chance, but what it's a. It's a small chance now, isn't it? I mean, it's hard to see that thing turn around and to win a series. Now, you got to win four of the next five. How's that going to happen?
Right.
I don't see that happening.
Doesn't look good. No, Earl, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Best of luck in Memphis. The FedEx St. Jude next on the PGA Tour, should be another great event. And right after that, Oakmont, U.S. Open, so good time of the year.
Passes for Elvis and see what happens this weekend again.
See what happens. Perfect. Thanks, Earl. Appreciate it. Have a great week.
Yeah, okay. Bye-bye.
Okay. Earl Forsey with PGA Tour Radio. And, so the next tournament is the FedEx St. Jude Classic in Memphis. We'll be there. Frank Bassel will be there this week. And we'll be giving you some updates what's going on there. Yeah, and he's totally right about Cleveland. It's been, 53 years? Am I right on that? 53 years since that city's had any kind of a champion in any sport. 53 years. I mean, it's more than a generation. I mean, that's lifetimes. So it doesn't look good again for this one coming up. He was talking about Kevin Love having the concussion. He only had 5 points, probably be out. LeBron, 19 points. Kyrie Irving, 10 points. I mean, it's just their stars aren't getting it done. And if that's not going to happen in Cleveland, then it's just it looks like Golden State's just going to run all over these guys. We'll see what happens. We'll see. Never know. All right, well, that'll do it for today's show. We appreciate everybody for listening so much. Thanks so much for Earl Forsey joining us, along with Art Selinger, talking about Jamie Sadlowski. We'll let you know next time we're on the air what Jamie does in today's U.S. Open qualifying. Also, thanks to Bobby Raymond and Frank Bassett, as always. I'm Tim Matthews, people. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next time right here on Golf Talk America.